Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast dedicated to exploring the lives of people in our community at the Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo. I'm your guest host today, Becky Howland. Jack Brennan is on vacation today. I'm just kidding. Jack Brennan is never on vacation. Come on, guys. She is our honored guest today on this 50th episode of the Connections Podcast. Jack Brennan was born in Houston in 1951 to Jack and Doris Brennan, the absolute best parents ever. She describes her childhood as a Leave It to Beaver world. She grew up with two older brothers, Danny and Pat. That's right, she was the youngest and the only girl. Jack, were you spoiled?
Yes, definitely yes.
Her childhood was filled with music, baseball, and politics. Her adulthood is filled with music, baseball, and politics. Jack, I know I'm supposed to do the whole bio first, but I have a question already.
No.
Yeah.
Becky, we don't, that's not the way we do it.
But I have a question.
Have you never listened to the podcast?
Yes.
Because I go through the whole bio.
I know, but there's a question that I have to ask in the beginning.
Okay.
All right, thank you so
you
much.
You could make a note and ask it later.
I know, but once you hear what it is, you'll understand why I have to ask it right in the beginning.
Okay.
This question is about your name
and
how to pronounce it correctly. I've heard you called Jacques. Like the deep sea diver.
Yes, yes.
Jock, like a high school athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack, which I think is probably not right because that was your father's name. Do you have a preferred pronunciation?
My preferred pronunciation is the way that you have heard me say it hundreds of times. At the beginning of every podcast, at the beginning of every time I make announcements, at the beginning of give me 2 minutes.
But just remind me, because, you know, my memory's not the best. What's your preferred pronunciation?
Okay. Listen carefully.
All right.
Jack Brennan.
Jack.
Yes.
So your dad's name is Jack Brennan, but yours is Jack Brennan, right?
So my name is Jacqueline.
Jacqueline.
That's my full name, Jacqueline. Uh-huh. And when I was growing up, people mostly called me Jackie. And some people would call me Jack. It was always like a nickname to call me Jack. Those were usually the people the closest to me would call me Jack. Because that's the whole point of a nickname, right? Is you get it down to one syllable. So.
Well, I called you Jackie one time and I almost did not survive.
Yes, that's right.
That's not allowed.
I really don't like it.
Okay.
Yeah. After my dad died, I introduced myself to somebody. And by then, most everybody was calling me Jack. And so I just said, I'm Jack Brennan. And it suddenly hit me that I just said my dad's name.
Yeah.
And it just felt so right.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that.
Me too.
Now, does it have a K on the end, or is it just J-A-C?
J-A-C, because there's no K in Jacqueline.
Well, it could be J-A-C-Q. That would be cool. Why don't you make it J-A-C-Q?
Why don't I just leave it as it is?
All right, Jack, since we're stopped anyway, I don't know why you talk so much. What were you like when you were a kid?
You know, what I was like when I was a kid probably had the most to do with what my parents were like. Like a lot of people, I say that my parents were the best, but they really were just outstanding. And not just my opinion, but like everyone who knew them. Like our neighborhood, our house was the house where everybody went.
Yeah.
The whole neighborhood would come to play at my house. And if I wasn't there, they still played at my house. Not because we had the best house or the biggest house or anything like that. It was
best
just
cookies?
No, my mom was not much of a cookie baker, although she did have pretty strict rules about how to make some things like Kool-Aid. She said, Kool-Aid, you have to use half the water that it says to and twice the sugar.
Oh,
yeah, that was the house I grew up in.
Okay, all right. Building Healthy Bodies Seven Ways or whatever.
An afternoon snack was you have to lemon, and then you got a measuring cup of sugar, and you just put the lemon in the sugar and licked it off.
I see.
Yeah, so.
Okay, that's why you're so sweet.
Well, you know, it was the 50s, man. Yeah. Sugar was the greatest. They were, as a couple, they were great, and then individually, they were just, they were such nice people, good people, supportive people. Relationships in the family built on trust, and we had dinner together every night. Every Monday we had the same thing. Every Tuesday we had the same thing. My mother made seven things and went on repeat. And there was comfort in that. There was just nothing I would change about my childhood. My brothers were good big brothers. They were older than me, but they were good brothers to me. And because of them, I got to know a lot about baseball, and we lived right across the street from a great big city park, and it was, you know, with tennis courts and big swimming pool and all that stuff. It was a great place to grow up and a great family to grow up in.
Yeah.
And I was a great kid. Pretty sure. Uh-huh. I've got nobody here to dispute that.
Well, did you? Okay, but everyone is listening to this, your answer to the next question.
Okay.
Did you ever get in trouble? And if so, what for?
One time my dad got mad at me for talking back to him. I think he told me to do something and I said no.
You didn't use the F word, though.
Oh, no, no. Okay. We did not do that.
Okay.
The worst thing my mom ever said, like for her... For her swearing, it was good night, nurse.
I don't know why.
Good night, nurse.
I haven't heard that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like
so,
it.
So, yeah, there you
good
go.
Good night, nurse. Well, thank you, Jack. Let's pick up where we left off.
Okay.
Jack went to college at the University of Houston. Her undergrad degree is in music. I think voice and piano, is that right?
Stick to the script.
No, I thought one time you said voice, and then you quickly switched to piano.
I started out majoring in voice.
Yes.
After my first semester, I switched to piano. I had taken piano lessons from when I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
My dad bought me a piano, and he wanted me to learn to play Rhapsody in Blue. That was his goal for me. And I did. We found an easy version, you know, after about a year. And then I eventually got to where I could actually play Rhapsody in Blue.
Could you play it for a music ministry?
No. I did. I really doubt I could even play it now. I switched my major from voice to piano, and my degree is in music. They don't mention an instrument, but that's what it was.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Two instruments.
Yes.
Then you married your high school sweetheart, Lonnie Vera, and you had two kids together, Danny and Kendra.
That's right.
Jack and Lonnie divorced after 8 years of marriage and said that although they didn't always have a perfect marriage, they had a perfect divorce.
We definitely did.
They stayed close, and all the kids consider Lonnie to be a dad to them, although everybody calls him Soda Pop now. More on that later. Jack married Tom Roach in a Unitarian fellowship they attended, and they had two kids together, Colin and Sean. Okay, so you've got Danny, Kendra, Colin, and Sean, right?
Yep.
That's four. But that's correct. I read in your bio on the UUSM website that you have, I don't remember exact number, but like two or three dozen kids.
I can never remember the exact number.
And at some point I want you to talk about that, but first let's return to the story.
Okay.
Don't keep getting me off track.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Tom and Jack helped to establish a nonprofit called Shamrocks and Bluebonnets, which brought children in pairs, one Catholic and one Protestant, from Northern Ireland to stay with Texas families for the summer. They did that for two summers. Jack traveled to Northern Ireland to work with the priest and the minister, to visit each family who was sending a child, and to pair the children. At the end of the second summer, they realized that they loved the kids from Northern Ireland so much, but they were sending them back to a war zone. They discussed that there were children in Houston living in their own little war zones and they needed foster parents. Aha! So that's how your family ended up growing even further, right?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. Tell me about being a foster parent. What was it like making that big decision?
Yeah, I think like most people, Tom and I were worried about you get attached to kids and then they get taken away and how hard that would be. And people would tell us that all the time. They would say, I don't know how you do it. I'm just too tender-hearted. I couldn't do it. Yeah. You know, and we were like, oh, not us. We have very hard hearts. We don't get attached. But that's sort of the implication when people say, oh, I couldn't do it. I would just fall in love with each. Yes, that's right. We do that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about our feelings. I think that was the big thing that people have to overcome, is that being a foster parent is not about how you feel. But it was really about doing it for the kids. We had a really broad range in terms of how old they were. We had a 9-year-old who, when I picked her up, her and her little sister, she said, you know, this is the second time I've been thrown away by my...
Oh.
Yeah. She said, the first time my dad took me, I was really little, and he put me in a trash bag and took me out and put me in the trash. And my mom said that the reason he left us was because of me.
Yeah.
It was just
heartbreaking.
We would also have sometimes newborns. She had a little sister who was 1 at the time we got her. Mm-hmm. I'm back in touch with the little sister.
Yeah.
I've kept in touch with a few of the, you know, found them on Facebook later.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the 1-year-old has no memory of me, but she was thrilled to get pictures. She lived with us from when she was 1 till she was 2.
Yeah.
And she, you know, had no pictures from her early childhood and things like that. And they just, most of them came from the really most dire of circumstances. So it was really hard every time. And every time I spent 3 days bawling my eyes out about them leaving. But it was about just giving them something that they could put in their back pocket. That 9-year-old, for example, she'd never been trick-or-treating. She'd never celebrated Halloween. She'd never decorated for Christmas. She'd never had a Christmas tree. It was just about giving them experiences that they could pull out of their back pocket later.
When they wanted to feel treasured and loved.
So they would have a period of that in their lives.
Wonderful. Tom and Jack fostered kids for 3 years.
Yep.
The kids were between 4 days old and 9 years old. And one day they got a call asking if they would foster a newborn named Paul. His birth mother had made an adoption plan and a family was waiting to adopt him. But when Paul was born, he had developmental delays and the adoptive family backed out of the adoption. Jack and Tom would have Paul until they could find a family to adopt him. And a few months later, that family turned out to be them. This set them on the path of adopting children with different kinds of disabilities. They also adopted Megan, Kelsey, Bridget, and Tyler. That's 9 children altogether.
Correct.
Tom and Jack were married for 25 years, although they did not live together for the last few years. They celebrated their silver anniversary by going to lunch, toasting to their 25 years, and signing the divorce papers. They stayed very close, with near daily contact, until Tom's death in January of this year.
We really didn't have a typical situation in our family ever. Whatever people think of normal beyond that setting on a washing machine, we didn't really have that in our family. Lonnie and I, my first husband, we stayed close. We're still close. Mm-hmm. Tom and Lonnie were friends. Later, James, you know, all three of them were good friends.
Yeah.
When we adopted Paul and they called us and they said he had developmental delays, I didn't know anything about disability. Disability did not have a place in my world, you know. I just had not dealt with anything like that. When I heard developmental disability, I said, how delayed can he be? He's 3 weeks old. So he's 3 weeks behind his peers. I think we can handle that. Yeah. It was just beyond my world view at that time. So getting into all that, learning about disability, going to all the medical appointments, going to all the therapy appointments and having therapists come to our house and all of that, we just learned so much. And so we thought, we're good at this. And so we should adopt other kids who have different kinds of disabilities. Mm-hmm. That was how we made that decision.
Oh. All right. Now, I heard you drop in a name that we haven't heard yet in your story. And that's this guy named James.
Yeah.
So Jack met James May in 1997. Now, for our listeners, James is the partner that we know and love.
Yep.
He was a breakout podcast star just, what was it, like a couple months ago. He was good. So in 1999, James and Jack started living together, and they married in 2006. James, Tom, and Lonnie were all friends, as Jack has said. They helped each other out. They spent time together. They celebrated all holidays and birthdays as a family. And they just generally functioned as one big family. The kids all had three dad figures that they could count on always. And lucky for the kids, and I would say probably for Jack too, all the dads had different areas of expertise. I know about James's expertise. I mean, it seems to be everything. So I can't imagine what you needed out of Tom and Lonnie, but I'll just have to take your word for it. Although, is there something that James cannot do? Is there something that you're willing to say on air? I can't think of anything.
Well, I think James would be the first to say that he's not a great public speaker because it's hard to hear his voice.
Yeah, he's quiet.
Yeah, he's very quiet that way. That's one thing that he can't do.
Right. Could either Lonnie or Tom do that?
Yeah.
Okay, well there. We've got a proof statement. Proof right there.
Yeah.
Now, there's more to Jack than just getting married a bunch of times and having a gigantic pile of children. Thank goodness. Three husbands and nine children wouldn't keep you occupied for more than, I don't know, a couple hours a day, right, Jack?
Yes. I think I spent an average of a couple of hours a day on that.
So, all right. So you had three fathers for your children.
As one friend used to introduce me,
This
is my friend Jack. She has nine kids by seven different fathers. Because they adopt.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes you sound pretty wild.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mind it. Yeah.
It's kind of good. I like it. One of the things that is not anything we discussed talking about, Jack, because I know that you're not going to want me to ask this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, and you can edit it out if you don't like it. So the children had three fathers. They were raised by three fathers. But also, you are actually triplets. So all of us...
I am triplets?
All of us were wondering, like, how does Jack get all that stuff done? And then one time, you know, in a very private moment, I asked Jack, are there more than one of you? And then she said yes, and she said it was a big secret, and I wasn't supposed to tell anyone. And I was picturing two, but now I'm thinking three, because, I don't know, three mother figures and three father figures.
I see.
Does that make sense at all?
No. Definitely, that doesn't make sense at all. Not surprisingly. but a lot of people have accused me of the twin and triplet stuff, but no.
It's not true?
No. It's just that I don't sleep.
Yeah, that's the other explanation.
Sleep is something humans do.
Okay. The triplets is just a rumor.
It is just
a rumor. And then I heard another rumor that I want to check out with you. The other one I heard, I'm going to wait till you finish your tea because I don't want you to spit it out when I ask the question.
Okay.
I heard you are actually 5'11" and you just have found a way to appear smaller so you don't intimidate people as much. Is that true or is that also a rumor?
I'm 5'11 in my mind.
Yeah.
So I am physically intimidating to people.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my actual frame is just this.
It's compact.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So in 1995, getting back to the story here.
Oh, yeah.
Jack started law school at the University of Houston Law Center. And graduated in December 1997, a semester early. Now, why did you graduate a semester early? You were just overachieving.
That's just how I am.
Yeah.
I always like to throw that in there because I worked all the way through law school.
Yeah.
And I still managed to get out a semester early by just taking, I took every intercession class that was offered. Yeah. I took classes in the summer while I worked. I ended up graduating in January, but I didn't leave law school. I started, there's an advanced law degree you can get called an LLM, and I started that. I never intended to finish it, but I started it just so I would still be in law school because I really loved law school.
Yeah.
And you won't find too many lawyers who say that.
Yeah.
But I went to law school in my 40s and I really loved law school. At that time, I was like the chief justice of the honor court.
Heard... I shouldn't laugh. That's probably a real thing.
It is a real thing.
It's a real thing. Okay.
It's a real thing. But...
So it's not like when I call you chief communications officer of UUSM.
Because that's not
that's
a real
not
thing.
A real thing. Okay.
But this was a court that heard students, when students were accused of things like plagiarism, say,
oh, cool.
We would have the trial.
Yeah.
Do all that. It was really fun. And this is one of my best stories about that. I made notebooks for all the other justices on the court so that they would have all the rules that we function by and everything in front of them. We had computers at this point, but people still did everything in real notebooks. I had these in the back of my car. I had a big Suburban.
You had a few kids to
yeah,
carry
right.
around.
Yeah. And I was working late at my law firm one night, and my car was stolen.
Ah.
And it had all those books in there. And they stripped the car clean of every conceivable thing. Like, they took everything. But on this box where it says Chief Justice of the Honor Court, thieves wrote a note and they said, "You may think you're a big deal, but we got your car. See you in court." And I, as a law student, was just like so thrilled that somebody said, "See you in court." You
yeah.
know?
Like, yeah.
Okay. See you in hell, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, so. Somebody actually took that as a serious thing.
Oh my gosh. Well, it is a serious thing. Yeah. All right. So you passed the bar in February. This is a Texas bar.
Yep.
And you became a lawyer in 1998.
Yep.
And you're still a lawyer or a lawyer emerita. Do you say emerita? Not they emeritus.
They say emeritus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should they say emeritus?
Texas does.
Is that just Texas?
I don't know.
All right.
I mean, maybe they didn't count on any people with lady parts becoming
that's
lawyer.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
probably it. Okay. Well, I'm going to say that you're a lawyer emerita, licensed to practice in Texas.
Yeah. You get that emeritus thing just by turning 70.
Oh, is that right?
I didn't even know it was a thing.
But you weren't 70.
Yeah, they sent me a thing and they were like, "You're turning 70 and you don't have to pay bar dues anymore."
Ooh.
And you're called a lawyer emerita. No one who knows is really impressed, but even most lawyers don't know until they're 70. So.
Well, now all these people are going to be not impressed when you say that because they're all listening.
Dang.
Yeah.
The Texas Lawyer is a newspaper that that goes out in, to lawyers all across Texas. And they did an article about me after I became a lawyer, and they called me the happiest lawyer in Texas. How's that?
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to think about that. I'm not sure what to think about that. Huh. Well, maybe it had to do with your love of the law. That makes sense to me. You love the law.
I do love
the law. You
wanted
to stay in law school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you are also admitted to practice before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes.
And I know that you know a lot about the Supreme Court because you run a Wednesday night...
Justice Circle.
Justice Circle. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I do have another question for you.
Okay.
If you could practice law in California, would you want to do that instead of serving as UUSM's chief connections officer?
What a great question.
I'm really just asking you how much you like your job at UUSM. That's really the
but
question
I don't,
I'm asking.
I never anticipated how much I would love doing connections, you know?
Yeah.
The last 17 years that I was in Texas, I taught the paralegal program at the University of Houston. Mm. I also had clients, and I was still doing cases, but that was my main thing, was teaching. So I don't know that I would have really wanted to start over lawyering, like opening my own shop or something, but
yeah.
I never thought I'd love anything as much as I love lawyering, but I do love... Okay, but I will say part of what I loved about being a lawyer is saying, I'm a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Being the connections person at UUSM, I don't get quite as much juice saying, I'm... connections, because people don't know what that means.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I started the job, I was...
Okay. You thought it was something entirely different and you're really disappointed?
No, I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And I had a hard time getting anybody to really tell me. People were having trouble describing exactly what it was. And then I realized it could be whatever I wanted it to be.
You
know,
could mold it.
Yeah. And... I realized that actually when I was on a call with people that do my job all over the country, UUAMP, UU Association of Membership Professionals, and there was a question that they threw out, and every single person had a different answer.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, so there's not like one right way to do this job.
Right.
I can put myself into this job, and I can put my own creativity and ways to connect and... enthusiasm and all of that, because I was at first approaching it timidly because I wanted somebody to tell me what's the right way to do it.
And right, because a lot of people think of you that way, just holding back and being timid.
yeah, timid is probably what first comes to mind when people think of me. Yeah. So, I'm happy to be a lawyer, and I could still do cases like in federal court here. I wouldn't have to do state court cases, but... I really love what I'm doing at UUSM. Mm-hmm. I really love this community so much. So that's not in the right place for our biography that we're doing here. But
I know. You keep interrupting me.
All right,
let's get back to the story. Don't talk about UUSM. Nobody wants to hear about that. Okay. In 2008, Jack started a nonprofit called A Simple Thread. She still thinks it was one of the best ideas she ever had. Jack, tell us about A Simple Thread.
All right. It did start with a really small idea of helping homeless Houstonians in some way. Actually, it started with me reading a John Grisham book called Street Lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
And at the beginning of Street Lawyer, a guy comes in, ostensibly he has... suicide bomb type vest on, and he takes this conference room full of lawyers hostage, and he threatens to blow up the place. He's homeless, And he goes to each lawyer and he says, what have you done for poor people? What have you done? Mm-hmm. And they're all like, well, every year I donate to United Way, or my wife plans a gala ball, or my husband plays in charity golf tournaments, all that kind of thing. And he's like, no, what have you done? What have you done? Mm-hmm. And it made me think. And I can remember exactly like where I was sitting and what I was wearing. Mm-hmm. It was one of those moments. Mm-hmm. What have I done? What have I done for poor people? Mm-hmm. And that's when I had this idea to start A Simple Thread. It was always meant to be this very basic thing. We didn't start with a mission of trying to end homelessness. It was just to show kindness to people who were unhoused. Homeless. At that time, it was homeless. Mm-hmm. Now we say unhoused, but at that time, the word that we used was homeless. So homeless Houstonians, we put together these little kits, and they were just things that you and I take for granted that we have, like aspirin and toothpaste and a toothbrush and tissues and... And when I started it, I didn't know any homeless people. I never had a real conversation with a homeless person. But once we started going out and handing out these kits, we gave the kits out, but we more than that talked to the people. Yeah, we listened to them. We asked them what they wanted in the kits, and we never thought about people would like an envelope with a stamp on it that they could send a note home. Just odd things like that. One time we put pads of paper and pens, and a guy came up to my car window as I was leaving, and he had written his name, and he said, I haven't written my name out in a few years, and today is my birthday, and I want to show you my name. I want somebody to know my name on my birthday. And just... This was a small organization, and we all worked hard, and it was an all-volunteer. We had zero overhead. It was all volunteer. Every penny that we got in donations went into the kits. But this one law firm every year, they would sponsor sleeping bags, and they would 150 or 200 sleeping bags, and we'd go out. And one night, as we were coming back from that, I had about four sleeping bags left. We went to this place where we know that there's always people sleeping on the sidewalk. And I went up to this one guy, and this was my last sleeping bag for the night. And he was asleep. He was on the concrete on a little, he had a little piece of cardboard under him.
Yeah.
I didn't want to wake him, but I just put it beside him, and he opened his eyes. And I said, this is a sleeping bag for you to stay warm. And he said, are you an angel? I got so much more out of it than I gave. We just ran it out of our house, and we would do Girl Scout cookies. I would buy 500 boxes of Girl Scout cookies every year. And they were great because Girl Scout cookies are way more than cookies,
right?
They're memories. We would let them choose, and we would always get like the classic stuff that they would have had and listen to their stories about when their mom would save up and buy one box and bring it home to the kids. Their niece used to sell them. Just listening to their stories, listening to them. Yeah. It was such, that's why I always say it'll always be my best idea, because we were successful no matter what, because we didn't have the lofty goals of ending anything. We weren't like throwing people a lifeline. We were just giving them this simple thing, just trying to make their life just a little bit better at that moment. That was a really good idea, and I'll go to my grave thinking that was one of my best ideas.
That's a wonderful
thank you, John Gresham.
My goodness. So what did you do in your free time? Because you must have had quite a bit of free time back then.
Sure. Yeah. So much free time.
Yeah.
James and I also had two little free libraries in front of our house, and we had a little free pantry for, I think, around 10 years. We were both political activists. I had always been a political activist, you know, in different ways throughout my life. In college, doing demonstrations. One time in college, they were building a new fine arts building, and they were going to bulldoze this huge oak tree, and we lived in the oak tree for 3 weeks, shifts, but until they changed their minds and they redesigned the building to go around the oak tree so that the oak tree was right in the middle. And it was so great until 2 years later, the oak tree died from the
sun. From the weight of the building?
Yeah,
the roots.
From all of it, yeah. I had always engaged in that kind of thing. James really wasn't political at all until, actually, I think the biggest thing for him, obviously living with me would make most people political just because it's so much a part of what I was.
Right.
But it was really the school shootings that got him to the point of really being an activist. He went to Washington, D.C. for March for Our Lives and marched there and talked about gun control to our legislature. But his big areas were voting rights and common sense gun control.
Yeah.
Mine were mostly reproductive justice and disability rights, of course. That was what we spent a lot of our time doing as well. Yeah, we were a campaign office when Beto ran for the Senate in 2018. He had homes in neighborhoods where we had all the signs and the bumper stickers and all that, and we trained people to go out and do canvassing and all of that stuff.
Wonderful.
Yeah, a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah. So as you're talking, I found myself getting a little bit quiet, and I'm getting depressed and feeling inferior, hearing about all of your accomplishments. I don't have any grandchildren. Do you have any of those?
No, I don't, no. Becky. No, I'm the same as you.
I don't have
any grandkids.
Yeah.
I mean,
I met Ellie. Is she your granddaughter? I thought she was. Okay, tell me the truth, Jack. Fess up here. Do you have grandchildren?
I do have grandchildren. I'm sorry. But honestly, when you have... You know, I increased my odds a lot, right?
Yes.
By having so many kids.
Right.
So, yeah, I got grandkids.
That was smart.
Yeah. Our first grandkids were twins, Jack and Andrew. They're 14 now. Then the next two were Leo and Casey. They're both in middle school now. Another set of twins. I have two sets of grandkids.
Wow.
Another set of twins came along, Skylar and Miles. They are 9 years old. And then Ellie, who is now 8. And then Rye, who is 7. Stacy is 5. Millie is 4, and Mason is closing in on 2. So 11 grandkids.
Grandkids. Including Ellie. And, you know, I love Ellie. She's been coming to UUSM for the last, 5 or 6 Sundays now. She's a light. She walks in and she lights the place up.
She loves it, too.
She's been participating in the services. She has been fantastic at using her... physical strength and helping me carry tables into the courtyard. So she's helped me with that. What does she call you? I heard her call you something else. It's not grandma.
No, the grandkids all call me Lollipop.
Lollipop.
Lollipop is my grandma name. And James is Popsicle. And then Lonnie is Soda Pop.
Okay.
That's our names.
And has anybody taken either popcorn or Pop-Tart?
No. Do you want to be Ellie's Pop-Tart?
I think Pop-Tart would be really a good one for me, and I used to love those when I was a kid.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
It's yours.
Okay. I am just having way too much fun guest hosting you, so I'm thinking that we're going to have to do a part two.
Looking at the clock, I think we will.
We've been going for like 4 or 5 hours now.
So. Yeah, true.
Yeah, so we're going to need to do
It's going to take some editing,
And we'll work on that 1 week.
Okay.
If you have time. But first, I want to do just 3 quick hitters.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll take a recess.
Sure.
Okay. So first one is, what's the best excuse you ever made for being late?
I saw a dog.
Ooh. Must have been a really cute dog.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, you know, I saw a dog running down the street and I had to catch it. Or there's a lot of ways you can go with that, but that's how it starts. Yeah. I saw a dog.
And how you say it leads into what the story might be, because it could be a frightening dog.
Yeah, I saw a dog.
I know. And my thought is, I saw a dog and I'm thinking, oh, it's so cute. I had to stop and pet it and then talk to the owner and find out the dog's name. And
Yeah.
Okay, who is your favorite late night snack?
Who is my favorite late night snack? Stephen Colbert?
That's a good one. I like it.
Okay.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
All right. So if you could have two more children, which one would you name after me?
Well, the first one, obviously, right? Yeah, the first one.
What would you name the other one? Because you must have like a good name in your head that you didn't get to use.
Starry Decisis.
Starry Decisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I like about that? It's gender neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So it can really go any way.
That's right.
Yeah. Nice. Starry Decisis. Is that one word or two?
Two words.
Okay. Hyphen?
No.
No. Okay.
It's a Latin term and it means to stand by the decision.
Oh, sure, I knew that.
Yeah, of course.
So who is your favorite person at UUSM?
You said you were going to only ask me three quick hitters.
Oh, yeah. All right. Jack, it has been a pleasure hosting the host of the Connections podcast. Tune in next time, folks, when I'll be interviewing Jack again for part two of our conversation. I love these podcasts. And one of the things that I have found is everyone has an interesting life. Everyone. The quietest person.
It's really true.
Sometimes theirs are the most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Thank you all for listening. And I forget what you always say. Thank you all for listening. Keep giving hugs.
No, it's keep making connections. Don't you listen to this podcast?
All right. Thank you all for listening and keep making connections, right?
Right.
Yay! Right. Now, you're supposed to say that was fun, because that's, you know, when you wind it down, people say, oh, that was so much fun. I really enjoyed it. So you have to say something like that.
That was different.
Next time.